We got a guy on hold here. We're freewheeling a little too much. By the way, Mike McDonald from Damon College, the men's basketball coach, he's here with Mike Rodak, my crooked co-host, and Jonah Bronstein. He's adding things because we're talking nothing but net today. Hoops. Bobby Rosati diddling the knobs. On the phone, we have Washington Post NBA national writer. And do you live in Oakland, Tim?
San Francisco, boss.
San Francisco. Well, Washington.
A long way from Buffalo.
I should start pursuing job opportunities at the Washington Post if we can afford to live in San Francisco.
The weather's slightly better than it used to be for me. I'll say that.
The pride.
In February.
The pride of St. Bonaventure, former Buffalo News intern, now covering all things NBA. You're on here with Mike McDonald from Damon. He's here in studio with us, Tim. And you know
another
the rest
Bonaventure
of the crew.
Guy.
Yes. They're all over the place.
Timmy Good Times.
Yes.
So, Tim,
right.
What is going on? Let's start here, because I, as a native Clevelander, do follow it. I monitor it. I'm not a voracious Cavaliers fan. I just kind of monitor it. But I think the news in the NBA at the trade deadline was what Cleveland did, and I'm not really quite sure still to this day what they did, because they did so much.
Right.
But they certainly look like a brand new team. What's the feeling around the NBA? Are they afraid of the Cavs again?
I think, in general, people are curious to see what the Cavs look like as the season progresses. To me, I always thought they were going to make it back to the finals no matter how dysfunctional they were, just because they have LeBron James, who is the best player in the world still, and I didn't really trust any of these teams in the Eastern Conference to beat him 4 out of 7 times. And frankly, after the trades they made, I very firmly believe that to be the case still. I mean, they've only played 2 games with their whole team, but they dismantled the Celtics on Sunday. They won in Oklahoma City pretty comfortably last night. And just looking at their team, they make sense now. Before the trade, I should say the multiple trades they made, they just didn't make sense. They had all these guys that didn't fit the way they'd had success the last 3 years. They had all these old players. They had slow players. They had guys who couldn't play defense. They had guys who couldn't shoot. They basically got rid of all of them, and they brought in 4 guys, 3 of them were 25, Larry Nance, Rodney Hood, and Jordan Clarkson. And they brought in George Hill, who's the epitome of what a LeBron James point guard is, a guy who doesn't really need the ball that much, can spot up for threes, and is a long athletic defender. So now you look at their team, and they have a starting 5 with LeBron surrounded by 3 shooters and a role man at Tristan Thompson, and then a second unit with Jordan Clarkson with the ball surrounded by 3 shooters and a role man and Larry Nance. And their team just makes sense now. So, I mean, look, if they have some injury to LeBron, obviously that will prevent them from going as far as everybody expects. But to me, you know, these moves they made, unless something crazy happens, I think they're going to steamroll everybody in the East, because they're back to being the team that has been so successful the last 3 years in the East again.
Well, let's stay in the East, Tim Bontemps of the Washington Post, and take a look at the Toronto Raptors. They're first in the East. Obviously, based on what you just said, you think that the Cavs are the best team in that conference, but
And
I've talked to you in the past, not this year, about the Toronto, but you've always been hesitant to buy into Toronto, and rightfully so. They always seem to get to a certain point and never over that hump early on in the playoffs. What are your thoughts on what's going on with the Raptors?
I think if anybody does beat the Cavs, it's going to be Toronto this year. I think this is the best Raptors team that they've ever had. I think it's definitely the best team of these past few iterations. They're deep. They have a really good bench. Dwayne Casey's done a great job switching up the way they play to kind of fitting more with the modern NBA. They're taking more threes. They've got DeMar DeRozan shooting threes now. They're not as much in the mid-range. Some of the additions they brought in, guys like C.J. Miles, have fit in well. Serge Ibaka's played well for them. They could play small with Serge at center. Fred VanVleet has been really good as both the secondary point guard and their backup to Kyle Lowry. Lowry's played better after a rough start. So they look great. I still don't trust them to beat the Cavs in a series, but I think they're going to end up with the number one seed in the East, which means that they're going to be able to avoid the Cavs for the conference finals. And, you know, the way they're playing now, I have a feeling they're going to get there. And, you know, look, if they lose to Cleveland in the conference finals, I don't really think of that as a negative for them, you know, and especially if they're able to be more competitive than they were a couple of years ago when it was probably the most lopsided 6-game series in league history. So, I really am impressed with them. I thought if Cleveland hadn't made the trades they made at the deadline, I might have started to be inclined to think they could even beat the Cavs in the series, but even still, I think they've done a terrific job this season, and I think they're going to be right in the mix to make another run of the conference finals again.
In conversation with Washington Post NBA reporter, columnist. Do you write columns, Tim?
I do. Whatever.
All right. NBA writer, national NBA writer, sure. Tim Bontemps. What'd you give up for Lent, Tim?
I haven't even thought about it, to be honest.
Today's Ash Wednesday. You're a St. Bonaventure grad.
I discovered that while you guys were introing me in the segment.
You are 3 hours behind.
Whether you're going to Elmo's or not.
It is only 2:30 out there, so I guess your day is only just barely half over. But
I was doing work today and didn't even occur to me it was Ash Wednesday until I heard you guys talking about going to Elmo's. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it is.
All right.
Fish fry.
It's a bad job by me.
Well, Tim, let's talk about the team that you see the most. You're based out there in the Bay Area. I know you're at most of the Golden State Warriors home games. What's it like to be around this team on a regular basis? Never mind just how the X's and O's part of it or how they project towards another NBA finals appearance or any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Just the atmosphere, the fan base, the level of talent that's in that locker room. Lord knows I haven't been around anything like that covering sports in Western New York. What's the experience been like?
I think it's an interesting team because they're very bored and they play bored all the time because they know they're the best team and they don't really have to turn it on until the playoffs, which is why, you know, you saw Steve Kerr having his players coach themselves the other day because he's just desperately trying to find some reason for them to be motivated and paying attention on a nightly basis until the playoffs start. The thing that I appreciate about the Warriors is that they don't take themselves too seriously. Steve Kerr and Bob Myers, the coach and GM, are two of the nicest guys to deal with in the league. The players are all decent to deal with. You know, it's like if you can go around some teams, you know, whether it's, you know, in football or even in basketball, and they act like they're breaking down the atom every day and they're doing, you know, God's work and whatever they're doing. And when you're around these guys, it's just not really like that. It's a pretty down to earth atmosphere. Everybody's friendly. And it's just a nice reminder that everyone doesn't have to do the job the same way. You can be pretty open and accommodating and not, you know, be giving away state secrets because what you're doing isn't really a state secret. It's just basketball at the end of the day. So, if from that standpoint, it's a fun group to be around from a work standpoint. And like you said, obviously, you know, they're a hell of a team. And, you know, unless somebody gets hurt, I think regardless of what the Cavs did or how good the Rockets are, or some of these other teams, I'll be stunned if they're healthy, if it's anything other than them cruising through the playoffs to a third title in 4 years, given the advantages they have over the rest of the league still.
You mentioned Steve Kerr there and the speeches that he gives and the speeches and the things that he's been saying all season. The guy is impressive. I love listening to his thoughts, whether it be about LeVar Ball or what's going on in the NBA from a racial standpoint.
Right.
And there are a lot of NBA coaches like that. And Mike McDonald, if you want to join into this, if you're comfortable enough with it, we're a room full of white guys here, and I'm about to ask a question about race. But NBA coaches seem to have their finger on the pulse of what's happening with sports and society better than any other coaches out there. And, okay, I can understand that. Compared to NHL coaches, all right? That's a pretty easy, you can see that. Sure. I can understand it with baseball coaches even, although there's a lot, you know, there's some Latino coaches in there and you have the Latino element. But NFL coaches would never touch these subjects with a 50-foot pole. They want nothing to do with it. They don't want to talk about it, even after they're having meetings, after what Trump said about the sons of bitches, get them off the field, and the Pegulas brought the team together, and Sean McDermott did. And they talked about it, but it was still in a very sterile way. You ask Greg Popovich about it. You ask Steve Kerr about it. You ask Stan Van Gundy about it. And they are unvarnished truth, and they never misstep or seem to, because these are white guys, too. But they never seem to say the wrong thing. They say it, and they're bold about it, and you're like, you know what? That's right. Because a lot of times, white guy tries to talk about it, and you're like, I don't know. But why is what is it about NBA coaches, or maybe it's basketball coaches, period, where they get it?
Yeah, we're smarter than everybody else.
I was waiting for Mike to jump in with that one. That's the easy one. That's the layup for him.
Yeah.
I think the answer is less complicated than you think. I mean, in general, football coaches come from rural conservative backgrounds. It's a sport that's, you know, primarily where? From the South, from Texas. It's a conservative sport. Florida. Like, it's in general just a conservative sport. Basketball is a sport that's a much more cosmopolitan sport. Players that now about a quarter of the NBA is made up of international players. It's a sport from urban cities and city centers. It's a city sport. And, you know, so in general, you're going to have people coming from a different pool than you are from the NFL or from just football in general, right? I mean, you're just dealing with different people. Now, obviously, there are some differences there. Like Greg Popovich is a guy who, you know, a lot of people probably don't know was in the Air Force and, you know, was some kind of a spy or something. Like, he was a military guy who went to the Air Force Academy who then became a coach. So
I knew he was in the Air Force. I didn't know that he had.
Well, nobody quite knows exactly what he did in the Air Force, because it's
which is a clue enough. People don't know, because people have been trying to find out, I'm sure, and if they still don't know,
exactly, it's all kind of shrouded in secrecy, and he won't really talk about it. So whether he was actually a spy or worked in intelligence or whatever, like, it was, you know, he was doing legit stuff. He wasn't, you know, hanging out on the beach somewhere. You know, and there are guys like Bob Knight and some guys that kind of come from that kind of, Mike Krzyzewski, another guy who went to Army. Like, there are guys who have military backgrounds who become great coaches. But at the same time, I think in general, you're just talking about guys who are coming at it from a very different perspective. And so, you know, I would think that if Steve Kerr was going to have an opinion on a subject as compared to, you know, Sean McDermott. I don't even know where Sean McDermott's from, but just I'm assuming
Philadelphia.
He's probably from. Okay, so I mean, that's a little different scenario than maybe the average coach. But you know, I think for a lot of these guys, it's just they come from very different places. I mean, look at Rex Ryan, right? I mean, he grew up in Oklahoma. I mean, you know, or wherever. So I just think that I think that mostly it comes down to where these guys come from and who these guys are dealing with on a daily basis, because it's just. They're coming at it from a wildly different place than a lot of the NFL people are.
Mike, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think you got to be careful painting a broad brush with everybody and saying all football coaches are like this or basketball coaches are like that.
Sure.
You know, I think you got to be careful with that.
But we haven't heard a football coach talk like these guys do. So until they do.
I think, too, though, that the nature of the football business is different. They call plays, they cover their mouths. Right? How many times you see a football coach, he's always got the play sheet right over his mouth. Basketball coaches are out more in the open. That's the way it is. You know,
you're yelling the play to the entire arena,
and
to the entire gym.
You have 82 games for the NBA. You're going to have more times in front of the media where you're talking. You know, the nature of the football coach is, you know, we don't give away the state secrets. We're going to keep everything quiet.
I think
it's more of a cat and mouse game with the media. With the football guys, you know, that's the way Belichick is.
Yeah, no, I think, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Mike, but I agree 100%. I do think that part of the way, I wasn't trying to say that every coach in both sports is like that. I'm sure there are basketball coaches who aren't fans of some of this stuff either, but, and football coaches in the other direction. But I think, you know, to your point, I do think that the structure that the sports are set up with, where basketball coaches have to be out in front of the media a lot more, makes them, you know, a lot more accessible and comfortable with that stuff than football coaches who, you know, aren't that often.
I think that's
true.
And I think, you know, no offense to you, Mike Rodak, but I think they the football media is always trying to probe. You're there. You have nothing to do from Sunday night till Sunday afternoon at 1, right? The whole cat and mouse game is you trying to get something from the head coach for a story. So you're always trying. So the football coaches, by general nature, are more guarded. Plus, they have less games. They only have 16 games, and you don't want any kind of distraction.
They're all about the mission. They're all about the mission of, does this suit my football team or not? Yeah. But I would, even African American football coaches, you don't hear them speak in any the passion that these NBA coaches are to defend their players and what's right. I think
some of it's because they don't have necessarily the forum where, like Mike was saying, they, you know, you're speaking all the time to the media. You know, the NBA coaches speak before the game, they speak after the game, on the day off at practice, the next day they speak, where football guys are kind of in, out.
They're at a lectern. They're standing up there. It's very rigid.
Yep.
Right.
That's true.
I would think that Mike Tomlin probably isn't a fan of Donald Trump and some of the things he says. Like, just to use a random example of a football coach.
Sure.
But I think the number of games plays into it. You have 16 games. There's this whole strategic aspect to it where they want to keep information in. They want to keep the focus on the next game and preparing for the next game. And there's also the,
talking about race relations doesn't suit
right.
the team purpose.
And there's also the factor of you have 53 guys plus a practice squad, 63 guys on a team that you're trying to keep together, as opposed to a basketball team, which is much smaller. And it's, you just see more personality in the NBA as opposed to the NFL, which is just – you're trying to keep all these guys together, as we saw with the protest thing in the NFL this year, where I think the biggest issue that coaches and teams had with that was that it seemed to have divided locker rooms, that there was the group of players who wanted to kneel and then the group of players who wanted to stand up for the anthem. We saw that with the Bills. I mean, guys like Richie Incognito and Eric Wood, you know, those were the guys who I think were clearly on the side of let's stand for the anthem. Then you had a group of seven or eight players that were kneeling every week. And from a coach's standpoint, you don't want to take a side there. You sort of just want to make a non-issue of that and bring all your guys together. So I think the NBA is just more accepting of that. And I think you see that in just the way the game is covered, too. I mean, I think there's just more openness with coaches and teams with the media. I think teams are more open with which media covers them. You see a lot more smaller time, you know, bloggers and stuff. It's just a different sport and a different sort of culture around it.
I mean,
no
Steve Kerr,
about
Steve
it.
Kerr
I think,
led his players coach for a game.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have 82 games.
Right.
Right. You have a lot more games.
No,
you can throw one or two away. You can kind of, you know, kind of take a detour and then get back to the season, where in football you got 16 games. And if, you know, if somebody's divided, if we're not all focused on our mission at hand,
if we decide we're going to start our third string quarterback, then that's what we're going to do.
Mike Rodak,
we have no games to throw away in the NFL unless you're Sean McDermott, Nathan Peterman. Well,
no,
Tim,
well, that,
no, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. No, I was going to say was just in general, basketball is just a individualistic and creative sport kind of from the beginning, whereas football is a lot more regimented in a lot of ways. And I think it all kind of goes back to the same thing, where just the people involved are coming at it from very different places, and that leads to very different responses.
Well, Tim, thanks for joining us, giving us part of your day and your thoughts on what's going on around the NBA. And hopefully we get to cross paths soon.
I hope so. Keep killing it, Mike.
All right, thanks,
both
Tim.
Mics, I guess.
Appreciate it.
Tim Bontemps, Washington Post national NBA writer, columnist, reporter, / today's journalist. That's what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
He has been killing it. He was at the New York Post for a while and doing a great job there, covering the Nets, and ends up at the Washington Post. Glad to know him.